Welcome to the All Wheels Rolling podcast. My name is Mark Hamilton and I'll be your host. We are powered by Bourgeois Midland Nissan. They are part of the Bourgeois Auto Group. You can see their new and used inventory online at bourgeoisnissan.com. The Crank and Sprocket at crankandsprocket.ca for your bicycle needs in Orillia. And christinepratt.ca for all your physiotherapy needs, christinepratt.ca. And three new partners I have are the Simcoe County Mountain Bike Club, Barry Cycling Club, and Cycle Simcoe. More news on that coming soon. First up today, we have Mike Gordon. Mike is he has his Bachelor of Commerce, MBA. He has worked as a management consultant for McKenzie & Company in Toronto for 10 years before moving to Orillia in 2002. Since 2002, has primarily been a dad to two kids, which are now 18 and 15. Has also been an active volunteer on boards and several national charities and several local community organizations. Largest current role is president of the Community Foundation of Orillia. Mike was named Citizen of the Year in Orillia in 2018. So on the cycling side of things, Mike has ridden a bike to school and did some triathlons as a teenager. He did some mountain biking in the Don Valley area and trips to Hardwood when working in Toronto. He got back into riding more once he moved up to Orillia and rediscovered road cycling as Oro began to get paved a number of years ago. Really started riding seriously in 2010 when his youngest daughter started school full time. Mike was active in the Centurion 100 races up at Blue Mountain from 2010 to 2015, where he climbed the ladder from 165th to top 20 finish in 2015. You've probably heard mention of Mike on our podcast before. He is a very active Wanderer.Earth participant. He has most recently, I guess his greatest achievement is becoming the King for Canada of October. So we'll chat about that. Our other guest is, and his ride partner for a good chunk of these miles has been Glenn Maywissa. Glenn, you'll remember from episode 34. He is the host for the National Mountain Bike Championships, which were supposed to happen in 2020 and have now been pushed to 2021. Glenn is an active race organizer at Hardwood, a former worker at Hardwood, and active in the national and provincial level of coaching for a number of years, numerous awards, a great guy to talk to, intimate knowledge of Simcoe County in general, of all the trails and things you don't even know exist in the area. So we discuss the epic 8-hour challenge we discussed on episode 34, as well as sort of what racing might look like next year. Glenn has a bit of an inside track on that, and I hope you enjoy, folks. Okay, so welcome to the show. We've got Mike Gordon and Glenn Maywissa. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me. Glenn, it's been a bit since we've chatted about the 8-hour. How did that wrap up?
It went really well. I got some very good feedback from a bunch of people that did it that said they loved it. And actually, a bunch of people emailed me and said, can we run the same format next year no matter what? Because they liked that it wasn't like the big pack start and wasn't passing issues and it was quieter, especially midweek. So that was really good. I think that, you know, the people, I got good feedback from the people that were there. They liked it. There's a lot of people who didn't show up that, you know, and I get it, it's just not their thing. So I think, you know, we'll see what happens for next year. We have a calendar out for our events and what we're going to do. And I have looked at the model that the way they run Loppets in Scandinavian countries. So we'll have Vasaloppet. We'll have 2,000 racers on a Saturday. But like from Monday to Friday, they have what's called Challenge Days. So like Monday will be Seniors Day. Tuesday will be Women's Day. Wednesday will be Youth Day. And so same kind of concept I've been thinking about is maybe for the 8 hours for next year is have maybe 4 or 5 days of Challenge Days. And then depending on what's allowed as far as COVID, we could have a race day as well. Because we have the course set, we can run it in the same format. So we'll see where it all goes. And who knows? But I you know, it's, I think it went surprisingly well, and there was a number of people that did, you know, like Adam Hill and a lot of other people that did solo more than once. No one did more than twice.
Adam did not sweep the podium.
Yeah, there was one person that rode solo, tag team, and on a four-person team.
Really?
Yeah, and just because I loved it and just wanted to be involved and do it different ways, so that was really good. And there was numerous people that rode like tag team and then or tag team or solo, and then ended up doing a four-person team. I think it went well. It was fun. So I don't think it's not sustainable, you know, in a perfect world, but there is something to be gleaned from that as far as some lessons and as far as opportunities. So we'll keep an eye on what we can do with that.
Nice. And do you remember the name of the person who did three?
No.
Okay.
Top of my head, no.
Nah, that's all right.
Yeah, okay.
It wasn't me.
It wasn't you. No, it wasn't Adam.
I thought Adam might have gone for a three-peat.
No, no. Oh, no. There's no way. He was pretty shattered. The second time he did it, he went so much harder. And I think because he knew the course better, the course had gotten faster because it was a week later.
Yep.
So lines were worked in better. But he was... like really the first time he was riding it, the second time I was there most of the day, and watch him go up that first climb, like he's standing on the pedals hammering up, and you know it starts with about a kilometer sort of climb, and he was just punching that. So yeah, he really put it all out there as far as I could see, and when I saw him after, he looked like, you know, he had put it out there. So that was more of a race kind of day for him, because I think he was chasing him his own tail kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that was good.
It's so impressive to see. I know I looked on Strava and I think he had the KOM for a while. I don't know if he ended up with it at the end, but no, he didn't. Yeah. I think one of the Clark kids.
Yeah, no, Owen Clark did a couple fast laps. And yeah, no, there was a few people that did faster laps, but they were on four-person teams. So, like, that's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
But I was really impressed with the number of people that did 15 laps. Oh. 14 and 15 laps solo. Like, that's impressive. So, like, that was crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, to that number of people that got that many laps in. And I think that the lack of traffic allowed that, made it easier for people to do that. So, like, easier, quote unquote. Am I doing air quotes there? Yes.
Yeah. I think that happened as the week kind of went on. I know, I don't know if I saw you there, but there was a day when the truck store was doing sort of their thing, and there was a few of those guys. They were banging out laps pretty quickly.
Their elite team, John Barnes, and some of the faster racers, they were hammering some like 26, 27 minute laps and doing them pretty consistently. So, yeah. But they, funny story, they lost count.
Oh.
Yeah. So they actually posted that they did 17 laps, and there's no way they did 17 laps. So it was a bunch of back and forth emails trying to figure out what they actually did. They did do 16.
Okay.
But they kind of lost count. So we put them at 16 laps at 8 hours, and it was right around 8 hours. Yeah. So yeah.
It was That's funny. That's awesome.
Yeah. Has to be a teacher, you know, that gets always distracted.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Our other guest here, Mike Gordon, you guys have both been out a lot this summer, obviously without racing. And Mike, do you race normally or?
Not for maybe the last 5 years.
Okay.
But prior to that, yes.
Okay. So a bit of a different year, and you have, maybe you could explain, how'd you find Wanderer?
The man sitting next to me.
Okay, Glenn.
And I found it through your podcast.
Okay, interesting.
So there you go. Fair enough. Life's a circle.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you guys have been hitting Wanderer really hard. Mike, you especially.
Yeah, I've been hitting it very hard.
Yeah. So you're the only person, I think, you are the only person who's over 50% of Simcoe County.
Yeah, I think I'm like 56 now.
That's fantastic.
And I haven't ridden the southern three townships at all.
Okay.
So
Essa, Innisfil.
I've ridden Essa and Innisfil. I haven't ridden Adjala, Tosoronto, New Tecumseh, and whatever else is down there.
Beautiful riding.
Yeah.
Some of that's really beautiful. Yeah. Some of it's pretty flat, but it's a good mix.
Yeah. They're still on the to-do list, I guess.
Yeah. I'd be curious to know, between the two of you, if you could go back forever ago, maybe more for you, Glenn, in this area, because Mike, you're fairly... we'll say newish to the area. How long have you been here?
20 years.
Okay, 18 yeah. years. Mm-hmm. But you've been here. You've been here probably the same.
I've been here since 95.
Okay.
Yeah, but I haven't been on Strava before this year. So the only reason I joined Strava was to connect to Wander.
Okay.
So, like, and before maybe 4 years ago, I didn't even have a GPS, I don't think. Garmin. I'm low tech. Yeah. So, like, I have no data on the rides that I've done So not that that means much, but yeah, so it basically meant for Wander that like once I got my profile up, every ride I did for a long time was always considered a new ride.
Sure.
Because I had no back data at all.
Yeah.
And I haven't really gone back and found my back data, which is like, I'm kind of bummed because like I've ridden like in a lot of different places in North America and a lot of different places in Europe.
Yeah.
And none of that shows on my map. And I'm like, wow, it'd be really cool to have all the, like I've done bike tours in Europe, bike tours in, well, in twice in New Zealand, multi-week tours and bike, you know, whatever, bike touring. And so, yeah, to have all that stuff, it's kind of a shame because it's like, that would be really cool to have on the map. Cool. And yeah, a lot of exploratory riding that I used to do and still do some. So, yeah.
It sounds like you used to, with the Hardwood Raid and stuff like that, you have some very intimate knowledge of some stuff that people don't know exists.
Yeah, I used in the early days of mountain biking, like when I came here in 95 and even before that, we have a family cottage up on Six Mile Lake. My parents have been living in Bracebridge. So we would just go, I would go wander like on my mountain bike and just go explore and you just find stuff. And I actually used to run like in their early to mid 90s, we ran a 40K loop in Bracebridge. Like it was called the Muskoka Mountain Bike Tour. And it went through all these wild areas. And one was like, there was two farms that we actually went through and the cows are in the field as you're riding through there. And that freaked people out. And yeah, there's a place called the Galt Farm north of Bracebridge and it's called the Galt Swamp.
Yes.
That they used to go through. And we went through this and it's a cedar bog basically, which is a tangential story, but it's kind of funny because when you go across the cedar bog, it's no big deal. You go across the cedar bog and it's kind of spongy.
Yeah.
What we didn't figure out was that after 200 people go through across the same cedar bog, that sponge starts to sink. So we found out from the back quarter of the pack that they were about knee deep in water and freaking out because you don't, like, there's no bottom to these things.
Sure.
Right? So, yeah, it was like one of those, oh, we won't do that one again.
It's a Glen Melissa ride.
It was a Glen Melissa ride. So, yeah, so that's like, I used to do a lot of this stuff, which was funny because Mike hates doing that with me. We would go get lost together. And we have had a few times backcountry skiing and backcountry mountain biking where we got lost together. And we'd end up, one was up in north of Swift Rapids and we were on McLean Lake, I think it's called, or Matchedash Lake, somewhere up there. And there's a big rock, like high point. We got on top of this high point. We realized that it's like, we've been out for about 5 hours and we're about 3 hours from our car at the best case scenario.
Oh, geez.
And we both had kids to get picked up at school. So that's when we have to call, you know, friends and family. And so, yeah, we used to, the funny thing was that Mike, you know, got sick of getting lost with me and knee deep in water and stuff. So when I, you know, explained Wanderer to him, I thought he would never pick it up because it's like, well, that's ridiculous, right?
But yeah,
it went the opposite way. He got right into it.
Well, I have this bias that I ski all winter.
Right.
So I say I get in my, like I started out when I moved up, when I was in Toronto, when I moved up here, I was mountain biking.
Right.
And then Glenn, at some point, we started mountain biking together and he said, like, do you have a road bike? And I said, like in my parents' garage somewhere. So I got an old road bike up here and there wasn't that much paved at that point.
No.
So we were like, you had to know where you were going to hook up an on gravel road, true road ride. And started doing a bit more road riding. They started paving. I got hooked into the Centurion Collingwood race.
Yep.
Started doing all road. And I would say, look, I drive to Hardwood every day in the winter and then drive home. I don't want to put my bike in the back of the car, drive somewhere like awesome to mountain bike and then drive home. I want to just open my garage door and ride from my house.
Sure.
For the riding season. And so when he put me on Wander, I thought, yeah, he's going to hate this. Like he never wants to drive to ride. But I started slow.
Yes.
I started in Orillia. I didn't know how to upload the maps to my Garmin. So I would just sort of memorize a little chunk of the city. And I'd go out and I'd just do my best to try to, by memory, sort of hit all the roads and then come back home, upload it, and see how I did. And did that for a while. Then I figured out how to upload the rides, upload the maps. and I'd go from home and I'd try and just pick off the little dead ends that I hadn't done. But pretty soon I was realizing I was doing these 3 and 4 hour rides just to get like 15K of new road at the very far edge. Yes. Because everything in between I'd ridden.
Right.
So I started, unlike Glenn, I was on Garmin and Strava since like 10 years ago.
Okay.
And in the first like 9 years, I'd ridden 75,000K in this area on Strava.
Wow.
But all of it was on about 2,800K of road.
Okay.
Like that's all I'd covered in the area, which it's a lot of road, but yeah. Like it's not like a swimming pool going back and forth. But yes. Like I'd only covered 2,800 kilometers of road. This year I've ridden 4,500K of new road.
Wow, congratulations.
on Wanderer.
Of new road. That's unique new road.
Yeah, like 8,500K of ride.
Yes. And just in case you're listening and you don't know what Wanderer is, it's a companion app, I guess, to Strava. It reads all your Strava files and it compares all your rides to unique kilometers. And I have to say, as someone who's a fairly active participant in Wanderer, 4,500 in 1 year is phenomenal.
It's crazy.
It's absolutely phenomenal to do. You're in pretty elite company. And so for those who don't know, Mike is last month's Canadian King, Ontario, Simcoe County,
Central Ontario, Barrie, Muskoka District, Parry Sound District, Fort Lakes District.
He did a sweep. You swept
I swept it.
You swept it all.
Yeah.
But he aggressively went after that. Like he drive to, okay, I got to get more Kawartha. Okay, I got to get more of this. I got to get more of this so he can do the sweep, which is awesome. It's a game, right?
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
That's the best way, and Mike said the same thing, the best way to describe someone is basically it's a game.
It's a game.
And that you're playing this game and again, Mike knows a lot more than what I do. He can explain it, but the way the points work, and then you get points at certain percentages, you get points for monthly totals, you get points for all these different things. You can game the system, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You actually had something on an earlier podcast that's not right, so I'll correct it.
Oh, please
there's
do.
There's two ways you get points in Wanderer.
Okay.
The most basic, and this is really the coolest thing about it, and which is what I love the most, is you get a point for every unique mile of road you ride, road or trail. So it has a map of all the public rideable road and trail in the world, on the planet. And it breaks it down in all the sub areas. And you ride a unique mile, you get a point. Then you get bonuses. And those bonuses come in like sub areas. So within Simcoe County, there's if you hit 25% of Oro Medonte, you get a 25% bonus in points. If you hit 50%, you get another 5% bonus. Hit 75%, you get another 10% bonus. And if you hit 90%, you get another 50% bonus.
Oh, wow.
And at 99, you get another 10% bonus, but like, good luck trying
so
to get
you can
99.
Double the miles, basically.
I've done 99 in Orillia. Okay. I've done over 90 in like all the other surrounding townships.
Yeah.
Like most of Simcoe County North, I have 90% of now.
Wow.
So that's like the bonus structure for like coverage, if I can call it that.
Yeah.
But then there's also monthly challenges, basically. So if you ride the most new kilometers in Barrie or Simcoe County or Kawartha Lakes District, you get a certain number of points. I think those points are driven by how many kilometers people are riding in that area. Because Barrie will be small, Simcoe County will be bigger, Central Ontario will be even bigger, Ontario will be even bigger, Canada will be even bigger. You can get 500 or 600 points for being top in Canada in a month.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty big deal.
Oh, for sure.
That's like riding 500 or 600 miles.
Yeah.
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 Which is, it would take me a while.
New miles.
New miles. That's right. You haven't ridden before.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So the thing you had said was in Barrie, there's some oddities. Like Simcoe County makes sense. All the townships, like 14 townships and the two First Nations are all sub areas. So if you ride 25% of Oro, you get a bonus. You get another bonus if you ride 25% of Simcoe County as a whole.
Okay.
In Barrie, it actually has three sub-areas. It has like Arda Heights, Holly, and I forget what the third one is. Letitia?
Letitia Heights, yeah.
Yeah, there's three sub-areas. If you ride 25% of any of them, you basically get a bonus. It's like double miles. Like
okay.
If you ride 25, you get twice the points. But those miles you ride in those areas still count to your overall Barrie total.
Okay.
So if you then ride 25% of Barrie overall, you get another bonus at the Barrie level.
Okay.
And what changed this summer? Craig Durkin, who created this awesome thing.
Yes.
It used to be that the bonuses for either like a monthly challenge or like coverage, 25%, 50%, only existed at the level you got them. Okay. So if you rode 25% of Oro, then that bonus would be within your Simcoe County, but it didn't carry up to Central Ontario or Ontario or Canada or the Earth.
Gotcha.
And he shifted it so that all the bonus points flow up in probably July.
Okay.
And that's when I went, oh, that's cool. Because I've been riding intensely. Like, yes. I've ridden 99% of Aurelia. I'd ridden 90% of Romera and Severn and Oro. So I had a ton of bonus points in this area. I was getting close to 25% of Simcoe. And all of a sudden, all those points bumped up to the Central Ontario leaderboard, to the Ontario leaderboard, to the Canada leaderboard. And gotcha. I went from nowhere to like, wow, like,
yeah.
I can get somewhere here. So
yeah. There's only two guys that I follow on Strava who are in your hemisphere. You are one, and Glenn, but Andrew Ference. Do you know who he is?
I know he's one ahead of me in the Canada leaderboard, and so he seems to be running right now.
He's a retired NHLer.
Is he out in Edmonton?
He lives in Edmonton, but okay. He will travel. So he's, I think he just knocked off 70 kilometers in Vancouver.
Yeah.
So he has the ability to travel, and he does.
Yeah.
And I think he was hampered and said that weather in Edmonton, I think they got
a huge snowstorm.
They had a huge snowstorm.
Yeah, that helped me out last month.
He said Zwift was in his forecast there last.
Yeah, there's no new miles on Zwift.
No.
That's too bad.
It's interesting. I wonder if at some point
Craig might do that.
He might as well. Because there's quite a few worlds in Zwift.
Yeah, it'd be super
it's all
cool.
In Strava.
And,
right? If you want to ride up the
Yeah, so some people wouldn't want to do that. So
It'd
be interesting at some point if they
Well, and there's a lot of, like, when they have the world's course from past years of worlds and stuff, those are real, quote unquote, real roads in essence, right? So it'd be cool to say, I rode that, I rode it on Swift, but I rode that road.
Only air quotes cheat for Zwift in that venue is you can use rollers.
Yeah, but who
cares? So there's no elevation. I'm not making the argument. Yeah, I just know some people will make that argument of, well, they didn't really get it.
Yeah.
There's some sticklers out there.
Yeah, that's right.
No, I'm not sure. No, that's cool.
So yeah, no, I've been just driven by the, oh my goodness, I'm at 24% of whatever it might be, like Springwater Township. You know, if I go out and I do another ride in there and I hit 25%, I'm basically going to double all the miles that I put into Springwater.
Right.
So it's a really neat thing. It rewards you for doing, like, really getting a start in an area. So you get to 25% of an area, it doubles your miles. If you get to 90, it will double them again. Like, the difference between 25 and the 65% that you're going to do between 25 and 90 will get doubled.
Right.
But you get 5% of the doubling at 50, 10 at 75, and 50 at 90.
Hmm. Wow.
So you really have to go all the way, which is important if you know, like, when you get started, you can easily go into an area and just, like, not cross your own tracks and just mow through it, get 25% riding basically 100% new kilometers.
Okay.
But you talked about this one in your podcast. You try and do, I just was in Penetang a couple of days ago trying to do, like, a cleanup mission. Because I buzzed through there a couple of times, but I had a little bit here and a little bit there and a little bit there. So I think I rode like 45K and got 15 new kilometers or something like that.
Yeah.
So you're rewriding a bunch of road that you've already ridden.
So that sort of explains your strategy then. I saw you did a few rides in Barrie where you just kind of buzzed through on some longer roads just to pick up the long,
just
I'll call
pure
it the low-hanging fruit. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And then so it... What's changed when I was starting out in Aurelia and when I moved in, I'd already done a fair amount in Oro and Severn. I'd never really ridden in Romera. Is from the get-go, I knew I was going to do 90% of them. So when I went to an area, I did everything.
Right.
And that was much more efficient. Then I was like, oh, well, I'm never going to ride a Barrie.
Right.
Oh, well. Maybe that's a little bit of riding fairy. Well, I'm almost at 25%. Maybe I'll do 25% of it. Well, if I got 50% of berry. So, yes. You know, you get... Yeah. So that was where I was in Penetang. I'd like chipped away at it a little. I had 25% really quickly.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, I'll get 50%. Well, then you're like, oh, what? I could get 75%. And then you're like, oh, I really want to get 90% now. Yeah. But you've got bits and pieces all over the place that you've got to go and try and clean up. So.
Yeah. I've made... I don't know if you have any rules for yourself. I have a rule in berry. I'm going to go out and berry, I have to leave my house. I can't drive to the other end of town to go and hit an area. I got to leave from my house. And
that rule won't last very long.
It's only for berry.
Yeah.
I got some stuff like probably up at this end, we're in Aurelia. So probably in Oro, I think I'm missing some stuff that's like kind of up in this corner.
Yeah.
I might come up and just park in Aurelia and then hit that.
But my rule is basically single park. Like you could just jump in your car, ride out and back on a road. Jump in your car, ride out and back on a road. It's like if I'm gonna go to an area, I park once.
Yes.
And if it means I'm re-riding a whole bunch of road and you know climbing and fighting headwinds to get the pieces I need, well, that's you know I'm doing it as a single ride, to and from the car basically.
So just to touch on a point you brought up, so you've uploaded maps to your Garmin, is it? So are you getting maps from Wanderer or just maps
in general? On the Wanderer, like if you look at the map of an area on the like toolkit on the sidebar, there's a way that you can toggle to see the roads that you haven't yet ridden in red.
Right.
And then there's another thing that you can toggle to download a map in a Garmin file, and it basically emails it to you. It now also posts the map on your
dashboard
page.
Okay.
Only because I didn't get a couple of emails, and I emailed Greg, and I'm like, well, I didn't get emails. Like, I've been doing this all summer. I didn't get these emails. He goes, that's weird. Like, they showed on my
Mike and Greg have become best friends now.
Yeah, and he's like, well, I'll start throwing a link on your dashboard. So that you can grab them from there if you don't get the email. So I guess he did that for everyone, not just for me. That's great.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So once you grab those, then it's great because on the headset, like all the roads you've ridden are in blue. All the roads you haven't ridden are in red.
Okay.
And my little cookie trail is blue.
Like as you ride a red road, it overwrites it.
I'm overwriting it.
Gotcha.
So if I'm in an area, the only place it really doesn't work that well because you have to zoom in so close. If you're like riding in the Copeland or when I was trying to ride the mountain bike trails, like by the Ed Center in Springwater, the accuracy of the GPS is just so off that when it processes it, it'll recognize you were on the trail,
right?
But you didn't directly overwrite it. So while you're in there, you have no idea what you've ridden and haven't ridden because your lines aren't overwriting the stuff correctly.
Yes.
So it's still showing red. You're like, oh, I thought I rode that. And then you look really closely and you go, oh, I did, but I was like off to the side. And did I ride that one? And
Did you know that feature, the download feature of the map?
I think I did, but it's possible that my Garmin isn't compatible for that. I don't know.
No, because all you do is you get a gmapsup.image file.
Okay.
And you just dump that into your Garmin, like into the main folder of Garmin.
Okay.
And it'll upload it. Now, what I found is that, because I have like 9 of them now in my Garmin, that they confuse each other.
Yeah.
So if you're in an area and you have like 2 maps that overlapped, in that overlap area, it'll show double roads or the roads will be off by a few hundred meters.
Okay.
Yeah, so I always erase the previous. When I drop a new map in, I go and erase the previous map. Yeah.
Okay.
And even if you went back to an area, it doesn't have the roads that you rode. Like when you're riding it, your breadcrumb trail is like live on your Garmin. It's showing what you covered. But if you then finish that ride and then started your Garmin again, it wouldn't have that breadcrumb trail. It would still show all the roads that you hadn't ridden as red.
Okay.
So you need the latest version if you're trying to get over 90%.
Yes.
You need to kind of have the latest, what haven't I ridden?
Right.
Or you're going to be doing stuff that you've already done.
Sure. Yeah. I use it as a bit of a mental exercise when I'm doing stuff in Barry. I'll purposely jump streets to just see if I can use it as a bit of a game to come back and try and clean it all up. And
I love it because I plan like sort of a zone that I'm going to ride, but I don't actually plan a route. So I get in there and you've just got a subdivision with a random number of streets and you're like, hey, how do I go through this efficiently so that I'm not doubling back all the time. Like, yes. can I do a big loop around the outside and then sort of zigzag through the middle, or do I do the long streets and then double up on the short, short sides, or just depending on the shape of it. They're all different. And you just try and figure it out live while you're riding your bike.
And it's interesting. I don't know if you find this, but, and maybe Glenn, you don't do as much in-town stuff, but when you do, you can sort of see the vintage of the neighborhood, you know, because some have catwalks between streets and some don't. And it's a real...
And sometimes they're on Wanderer and sometimes they're not.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff out there that's not on Wanderer, but it exists.
And then there's stuff on that's on Wanderer that
doesn't exist. Or it's not what it says it is.
Like, I'm waist deep in water.
That's just supposed to be a paved road.
Early on, I was up by Swift Rapid, and there was a road that was on Wander, and it was supposed to go about another kilometer, and I ran into a husband and wife landowner who made it very clear to me that this is not a public road allowance. So that was, it was great, and they were nice, but they were very poignant in that they didn't want me there, and it was fine, but it's like, okay. And I think there's a way that you can report, like, that. Because that makes it hard to hit the 90 or 99% of these roads that you can't get to, or like legally, right? So I think there's a reporting way, and I think he's gone to Open Maps or something. You can report now and say, no, this road shouldn't be on there. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's some little walkways. I know, like, in front of the Bayfield Mall, there's a random, probably 10-foot long diagonal walkway that goes from the sidewalk into the parking lot.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, who's going to go and find that? I don't
think it's so random.
That's
the answer. And there are some places you really have to zoom in close. Like, along the Barrie waterfront, I hadn't realized that the boulevard is actually, it's a rideable road in each direction. And then there's the bike path beside it. There's actually, you can go three times back and forth on the Barrie waterfront, all as unique road. Which normally you can't do, like, you know, road, you ride it once. But
I think Owen Street in Barrie has sidewalks both sides and one in the middle. So your road is one, and then you'd have to ride the sidewalks in either side. I respectfully don't do that.
If
I've gotten them, it's by accident. And So route planning, you don't really per se spend the time of making a map ahead of time of, like, I need to go down this street, this street, this street.
No, I basically look just to see, like, where the red is.
Yep.
And then I try to estimate, like, okay, if I'm going to go for a couple hour ride, like, how big a chunk of red can I grab? And I pull a map from Wanderer for that section and then figure out basically where I'm going to park.
Right.
Ideally I park at the closest point. Like, you know, if I'm hitting an area, like, where's the corner that's closest to me, and I'll park there, unless there's, like, I don't know, some other reason to, like, big headwind or huge hills that you just want to have an easier second half than the first half.
Right.
Yeah, like, park a little more strategically.
But,
generally, and then I figure it out from there. And often, you know, it's either more than I bargained for, because there are some things you look at them on the map, like, I'm buzzing around a really neighborhood. It's like, woohoo, this is great. Like, I'm twirling around. It takes a certain amount of time. You go do that in, like, Sugar Bush.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. It's so hilly. Or like neighborhoods and cottage areas that it's deep gravel. It's super hilly.
Yeah.
It looks fine on the map. Like, oh yeah, that won't take very long. But in reality, like, it takes a long time.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason, actually, I like the bonus system. Because if you're going to get to 90, like, you basically are riding double miles, because there's so many dead ends that you're going to ride it out and you're going to ride it back. Yes. And so it's pretty reasonable that you get double credit for that mile, because you actually rode it twice.
Mm. Yeah.
You had to get to the end of it.
I did a ride probably 2 weeks ago. I self-torture, I guess. I don't know. I looked on maps, .simcoe. I found a bunch of road allowances, which I assumed were ATV trails, that sort of thing, and took the gravel bike, and it was just kind of a day for mental cleansing, I guess. Yeah. And boy, some of those ATV trails are hard. They are tough slogging. Like, the sand is so loose and deep and
hitting the rocks steep. Now in the leaves. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and steep. Yeah. And
by far the worst is the dirt bike trails in Anton Mills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is great. It's a beautiful section of county forest. There's all these big double track things that aren't on Wanderer. But what's on Wanderer is the windy, like, motocross dirt bike single track, which is all, like, the world's worst pump track.
Yes.
It just goes up and down and up and down and up and down. Oh, it's exhausting to ride. Yes.
Well, on my bit of epic adventure, it's a fifth line in Springwater. It's a road allowance that pops out from, I guess it would be baseline, has a road allowance. I'd come down there, and then I popped out at the fifth line. And then I knew if I'd gone over enough on the fifth line, I'd get to the actual rail trail. And that was sort of my out was, yeah. I think this should punch through. It does not.
Dead end.
But you kind of find out the hard way. I mean, I knew it was a dead end on a map, but it looked like...
But some of the gems are where it's showing that it's a dead end, and it even says no exit or dead end. And you say, oh, I'm going to go down there. And you get down there, like, hey, there's a little trail here. And then sure enough, like, 200 meters later, pops out the other side. You're like, that's awesome. Like, and you keep trying to do that, right? So, and also what I love about it is it forces you to ride in areas you normally wouldn't ride. Go down these roads you'd never go down, and you see the coolest things. Like, just cool buildings, beautiful little parkettes, like somebody else mentioned, all these little parks. I had no idea there was all these little parks out there. And little water access points that you'd never know existed, like ton of stuff. Like, I've learned, like, appreciated our area a lot more this year by doing all this unique stuff that I wouldn't have done otherwise, and seen some cool areas that I've gone back to and gone for, go for a swim somewhere or do something else, because you're like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
So,
I've said to a few people, if you are looking for a hobby, go, like, I'm using the city of Barrie because it's where I live, but the amount of parkettes that they have, I've said to myself, if I went and had a coffee in each one of these parkettes, I'd be trying to hit three a week to try and get them all done in a year. There's just so many. Sure. It's really impressive of what we have for parkland, and we just don't, we kind of take for granted or don't.
Yeah, they're usually empty.
Yeah.
They're usually empty.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's been a few when I was at a dead end road, and there was a driveway beside someone's house, and I just kind of caught the corner of a sign behind the house, and I wandered down the laneway, and sure enough, there was this beautiful park that five houses backed onto, and they were probably the only ones who even knew that this park existed.
Yeah.
Never been used.
Oh, that's neat.
It's a good thing they're empty, because one of the issues I've definitely run into riding in the city, like in Barrie, if I'm riding out in Oro, and you're out for a couple hour ride, at some point, like, you gotta take a leak.
Yeah.
You're riding around the city of Barrie in neighborhoods, like, it's all front lawns and front lawns and front lawns, and you're an hour and a half into the ride, and you're like, okay, I gotta find somewhere here to take a leak. Like, where am I gonna go? Like, I can't just stop. I mean, I'm sure, in France, the tour stops and, all the riders, grace someone's front lawn and it's holy ground.
Yeah.
I don't think the citizens of Barrie would feel the same way.
No, we didn't see it that way.
Yeah. If you scoot into some, like, empty parkette with a bank of trees on the backside, then, you're
fine. Yeah. Yeah, I've become a fan of construction sites. There's always usually a Johnny on the spot. You're risking your tires going in there, but well worth the risk, I guess.
Yeah, if you need it, you need it.
Yeah. Both you guys, I know, are tied to hardwood. Have you successfully got all the wanderers on at hardwood?
You know, it's funny because, I have ridden every trail there.
You've ridden every inch of that place.
I think I've ridden every inch of that place.
Created many of the inches.
But actually, the other day I was, like, just looking at the big map or whatever, and it zoomed in a little bit, and there's a whole bunch of little red spots. And so I don't know how often, like, it updates, as trails change, or someone, I don't know how it gets the information, but I swear that, like, when I started, hardwood was done. And now it's showing these tiny little red dots.
Interesting.
So it's like, well, I'm not going to go chase them, but at some point over the next few months, I'll probably eat through those just naturally.
Oh yeah, sure.
In some cases, they can be GPS blips too, because I've had, like, places where I've clearly ridden an entire road, and it will have just gapped on a little tiny piece in the middle, and there'll just be a little speck of red in the middle of a road.
Well, I noticed that on the Simcoe County Loop that there's, like, two blocks missing on on everything. Like
really, but actually on the map. Yeah.
It's not on the map. It's not on my GPS file. It's like it, like on my Wanderer file, whatever. It's like between the, I think the 11th and 13th or something like that. Like it's just, there's a gap there.
It doesn't show a trail there.
Doesn't show a trail there. Doesn't show that I wrote it even. Yeah. So I'm like, well, that's really weird. I'm sure there's like, you know, this is pretty complicated stuff at some level. Yeah. I'm sure there's got to be blips in the system.
So, yeah. And it doesn't just take it at face value, because I rode over the new bridge the other day in Barrie across 400. And there was clearly a gap on my map.
Okay. Yes. Like,
yeah.
That 400 corridor. It doesn't know it's doesn't there exist. Yet. Yeah. It's, In Craig's world, that chunk of road doesn't exist yet.
Oh, that doesn't exist. Yeah. And then, of course, the 400 and the 11 don't even show on his maps, which I think is great.
Yes.
Because you don't want people saying, well, I'm going to pick up some miles. So he must have edited all that out somehow. But yeah.
There's some rules at how it pulls the information from the open source mapping. It gets rid of highways.
Yeah.
But there's weird places where it's still like Highway 12 right through Marmara. It's all a rideable road. So
same with 26, and I found that one was kind of odd because that
bad news.
I got caught on there.
You were doing the round minicing.
I was
right?
trying to do the minicing. I didn't know it was so much gravel, so I was on my road bike and I was worried about getting a flat anyway. So I went on Highway 26 for like 1 second. I was like, it was brutal. I think someone mentioned the other day, like it was funny before when we first moved this area. The only main roads through Oromadante that were paved was Old Barrie Road and Horseshoe Valley Road. And we would ride them all the time. And all the cross lines and everything else were all gravel. And now it's like, man, I wouldn't ride on Horseshoe Valley Road. It's different.
It's an emergency bailout for me if I'm coming back from, say, Coldwater and I've parked at, let's say, at the fourth line there in the parking lot.
Yeah.
I'll maybe pop out at the sixth line and just do from the sixth to the fourth on Horseshoe, but I cringe.
But we used to ride that every week. And Old Barrie Road, like when I first started working at Hardwood, I would ride to Hardwood 2 or 3 days a week. Like I'd commute to work by bike from Orillia, and it was no big deal. And now it's like, there's no way I'd go on there anymore.
Yeah.
The
saving grace I found to get 90% of Romero is that there's these big wide gravel shoulders. I've been riding a gravel bike all year because I never know what I'm going to hit on water.
Sure.
I mean, it's usually some mix of paved road, highway, back street, gravel, and then like ATV trail through the bush in a single ride.
Yeah.
But I just ride the gravel shoulder, like right by the edge of the grass, basically. And you're a good distance away. It's a little slower than riding on the pavement, but so much more comfortable than like having the big gravel trucks whizzing by you at 100 clicks.
Yeah, I got up one morning. I wanted to do 27, so Barrie to Elmville, sort of. And I got up with sunrise. And even just the dump trucks. Like, I was on my gravel bike way off on the shoulder. But even with the dump trucks, I just...
Yeah.
I don't know. They come by you so quick. I didn't feel great about it.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
No. I would say on balance, Wanderer has caused me to ride much quieter roads. Like previously I was riding in Oro. I was riding on the lines. They're great. Like you get passed by a handful of cars an hour on those beautiful paved roads. I love this area.
Yeah.
Wanderer has mostly pushed me onto much quieter roads than that literally are in the middle of nowhere. They're dead ends, they're gravel, there's no cars at all.
Yeah.
But it's also made me ride some highway busier roads just to kind of get the completion that I would typically say I'd never ride. Like I've now ridden all of Old Barrie Road, all of Horseshoe Valley Road. Just once. But
Yeah, Adam DiBiasio and I, we've said from this year, I don't think he's on Wander, but said this year has been a good year to find some of the gravel roads. And it's finding those hidden gems. You're like, oh man, this just made the ride. And it just, him and I have gone out, and again, it's funny because he's not really a participant in this, but, you know, we'll go out and be like, okay, you make the next call. All right, we're going to turn right here.
Yeah.
All right, well, I don't know what's down here, so we'll turn left here. And it's just been kind of cool.
That's very fun.
It's an interactive ride for both of us, and we're hitting stuff neither one of us have done before. Yeah. And
that's a great thing about Romero. Like, it's mostly gravel on the highway, but it'll be gravel, and then you'll kind of get to the snowplow, turn around, and get the wonderful yellow sign that says, you know, no municipal maintenance past this point.
Yes.
And it'll be like kind of like, I call it cart track. Yeah. Like grass growing up in the middle, but like packed dirt. And then it'll decay into sort of ATV trail. And then like it comes out the other side. And you're like, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Overhung trees and just some incredibly beautiful spots to ride.
Yeah. Adam took me on one ride, and we were going down Rainbow Valley, sort of east of 27. He says, oh, we're turning here. And I said, down this driveway? And he said, no, there's another road right beside the driveway. And it was cart path kind of thing, like you say, you know, grass in between.
And you come out in a second.
No, we come out at Nicholin Farms. I said, I don't know. We're on private property. He's like, oh, yeah, I guess we are. I'm like, yeah, we can't do that. Private property's off of this. Shouldn't be doing that. Anyways, we did find a better alternative, which is Matheson Road. There's a little road allowance that takes you from the little end there, or you can go up Baseline, I think, is the road allowance at the end of Rainbow Valley. It kind of curls at the end of Rainbow Valley, and there's a couple,
turns north.
Couple options of getting out of there without going across somebody's property. And
then a bunch of unopened road allowances that are trails there that aren't on Wanderer. Like, you see them and you just go, wow, I'm kind of disappointed that's not on Wanderer because it looks awesome.
Yeah.
But like, I got stuff I got to cover, so like, I'm going to go.
Yeah. So we're in that shoulder season. Are you prepping yourself for the wind down?
The last few days I've been riding shorts and t-shirt. I feel like summer has been great.
Summer 2.0.
Sadly, yeah. It's coming.
Yeah.
So are you prepping for less Wanderer soon? Are you ramping up to get a fat bike?
We're 10 days into November, so I'm just hoping the West gets shut down so all those guys can't ride.
Yes.
And I mean, the other interesting thing, though, is that the monthly bonuses really vary through the year. Like, I think if I looked at, no, you took Simcoe County in August, but like Central Ontario, I think I took May, June, July, August, September, and October.
Okay.
But it varies in the number of points. Like, it went from like 50, or even Simcoe, from like 56 points to like 158 points, which I think is driven by how many people are riding and how many kilometers they're riding. Like, the more people that are riding more new kilometers, the kind of value of being the monthly champion goes up. And it definitely is trailing off. And some of the areas around here this month so far don't even have a monthly bonus.
Oh, okay.
They say like 6 more riders needed or 8 more riders needed in Kortha Lakes or Muskoka District or Parry Sound District to even have a kind of a monthly bonus.
Yeah.
Simcoe's got one going. Barrie's got one going.
Yeah. So we just need more people on Wanderer to get people out there looking at
it. I feel like we're doing the best we can.
Well, you're doing it. You should get a commission on this because it's great. Like, it's like, I don't know how you heard, who you heard about it from, but
Andrew Ferentz.
Okay, there you go. Well, that's very cool. Yeah. I thought, and the other day I was just looking at the leaderboards, and when Canada was interesting because Mike Vandeham was on there, Rob Britton's on there now, and like, these guys are professional riders, right? So like, if you look at their map, it's scattered across the world. Like, it's so cool to look at. And that's one kind of cool thing, that you can kind of snoop on someone without having to be a quote-unquote friend or anything with them. And you can just see, like, oh, where does Michael Vandeham ridden? Yeah. Where are his kilometers? Like, there's a lot of cool kilometers there. Like, a lot of neat stuff, right? So it's kind of neat to see that. And I look at it more where it's like, for me, it would be more like, you know, I'd love to be able to pepper the world, right? That would be my, as opposed to, you know, you want to get high density in this area, and you're obviously going to get that, but it's neat to say, okay, now I want to draw a line across here, and I want to draw a line across here, and how do you do that? And so that's where I think, sort of, for myself, that's the next step, is how do you sort of just get a bigger area that's got blue lines through it. So
I'll be curious to see if what the next generation, or where Craig takes his company, whatever he's doing with it. I don't know what his end game is. I've had people ask me, is there a Wanderer for running? And I'd be curious to see, because some people do both.
Yeah.
You know, if you, and I know I've logged some of the trips that I've been on, like I've logged the hike or whatever.
Yeah.
Just as a run, just so I could map it later on.
Yeah.
And like you said, I've done some bike rides and just cruiser bike in Denmark.
Yeah.
But I logged them just and they show up on the map, and it's kind of cool to see where I've been in the world.
Well, and on your dashboard, it's sort of, if you look down at your stats, like it'll say like how many countries you've ridden in, and it colors in, if you rode a little bit in the country, it colors in the whole country.
Yeah.
Because you've ridden in whatever the country is.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. I think I've only like 3 countries, which, you know, again, big opportunity there to...
Gotta go to Mallorca,
absolutely. We can just get rid of this silly
COVID. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we got to fly. I got that virus out there, that's true.
Yeah. We got to deal with that first.
Yeah.
So, Glenn, have you had any discussions about racing for next year? Is it a little premature for that?
No, there's lots of discussions. I think, you know, if anything, and it's no secret to get the word out, is that the OCA did a big survey on trying to get people's feedback on things, and they're just completing that now. And I think the OCA, all the organizers, everybody wants to be some kind of racing. And I think, you know, we're all hoping that things are reasonably stable, that we can look at racing. And then we're all looking at sort of, you know, scenario A, scenario B, scenario C. Scenario A being the reality of COVID and what it was like this summer. Well, what could we do? And so that it's, so it's more starting at the, I wouldn't call it worst case scenario, but what's the best thing that we could do to allow racing to happen? You know, it's going to be sort of cohorts at certain times of the day, time trial format. And there's a lot of, like I keep telling people, like it doesn't have to be, we learned from the 8-hour that it doesn't have to be a disadvantage. Time trial racing is unique to mountain bike, but it's actually a really neat format. And some people, I think, would like it better. Like, you don't have to have the mass start and elbows out and whole shot. And if you do what we call a reverse seed, where the fastest people from that cohort would go first, then there's going to be not very much passing at all. The courses can be, maybe they won't be as technical, but all of these things could be a real attraction to all these new cyclists that have bought bikes in the last year.
Sure.
Right? They got into riding because they can't go to the gym, whatever. All the bikes are sold out. Now they want to try an event, and here's a race format. And I'm, you know, heavy into ski racing, cross-country ski racing as well, and that's almost all time trial format. And there's a lot of advantages to it. So I think you don't have to look at it as that as a disadvantage. It's just going to be managing the before and after. That's the challenge. Like, we can look at the race course, the race situation from like race start to race finish and say, okay, we can manage all of that. Now, how do we manage the stuff that happens on either side of that, like being pre-ride and then people just being socializing in the parking lot or socializing on trail, and then post-race, like, you know, part of racing is the camaraderie of,
sure,
you know, shooting shit after and talking about your race and everything else. Well, you won't have that because, like, well, I went hard and I kept going hard, you know?
Yeah.
You know, will there be podiums? And the other thing is we have to look at it and go, okay, well, you know, let's say a typical mountain bike race is an hour and a half at an O Cup level. Well, you don't want a time trial for an hour and a half on mountain bike. Like, like that would just, after 45 minutes or so, it's like, now it's just nonsense, right?
It's cruelty, right?
So that's where we look at it. Like, that's all, a lot of this discussion is about, okay, well, how do we make this an advantage? Because, you know, maybe we don't want tech zones. We don't want feed zones. Well, if the race is only 45 minutes because it's a time trial, you don't need a tech zone and a feed zone, right? Like, and then we can do longer laps. So, it's tweaking all that stuff and figuring all that out. And then, you know, and getting everybody's to understand that. And then say, okay, well, you know, what do we need to do? And then from an organizer standpoint, there's just different kinds of challenges. You know, and what do we do about categories? Well, if it's time trial format, do you need to have beginner, sport, and elite, or do you need master, or can we just do by age group, or can we do it? But then again, advantages, like we can kind of do a verbal dump, but we can have a women's only, we can have a youth start where the youth come, they race, they're done, they leave, and then another group shows up. Maybe it's a women's start, so the women don't have to worry about having men on the course and being aggressive or whatever it is, right? And then we can have a kind of an age group start, and then we can have, like, you know, cadet, junior, elite, like the expert elite start, and then the idea is that, yeah, there'll be some where you have families where they probably they cross all of those different areas. So they're around for the whole day, but for a lot of people, they would just come at a certain time and they would leave at a certain time. And things like it would have to be pre-entry. You wouldn't be able to show up a day of, because sure, the time trial format, you've got to set the start time. So it would have to be a pre-entry, but that also allows us to do things like have all online waivers and everything else. So everything can be done ahead of time. So basically you show up at the race half hour before you start, you do a warm up and you show up at the start line. It reduces the touch points and it reduces the interaction. So all of those things. So basically, I think everybody's really motivated to make sure that we have racing.
Yeah.
It may look very different.
Yeah.
But then if we start at that sort of plan for the worst, quote unquote, and then if things ease up, then we can go back to more normal. And ease up on some of those bookend times where there's less socialization or whatever. I had a good conversation with Cycling Canada because we have national championships for next year because we didn't have it this year.
Yeah.
And the main discussion with Cycling Canada is that they have to have a national championships. Like, that they're highly motivated, right, and the riders need it. Like, the Canadian riders really missed those 200 points that they didn't get at Nationals, hurt them for the start line for Worlds.
Sure.
And hurt them for, start line for World Cups. So, Canada and US and some South American countries, we're really the only ones that didn't have a national championships. So, the commitment, the discussion with Cycling Canada was more about the commitment that we will have a national championships. Even in sort of a worst case scenario, maybe it's a time trial format, expert elite only, like national championships categories only, and it's a closed venue. There's no spectating, there's no whatever, but we'll make something happen. So, it's not great news, but that's kind of thinking in worst case scenario.
So, and I know I sort of put you on the spot. I know some mountain bike fans would want to know. I'm assuming that has to happen before the Olympics. Is that the qualifier for the Olympics?
No, it won't be the qualifier for Olympics. Yeah, that is something that's a little bit different. In a perfect case scenario, the national championships can be the final selection race for the Olympics. This year, because nationals are going to be July 11th, it's too close to the Olympics.
Okay.
It's not fair to the riders. It's bad planning to basically pick them 3 weeks before the race.
Sure.
The U.S. has made that mistake in the past, and we try not to make those mistakes. So, the Olympic selection will be based... It's not published yet, and I don't know what it is, but it'll be based on something else. It'll be based on early season World Cups. It'll be based on whatever else. And it's tough now because the level of racing at like World Cups is so different and so much more competitive than it is in the national championships.
Yes.
It's no matter where you run nationals in Canada, it's hard to say this is going to be the selection race. Like it's getting harder and harder. And, unless it's, but Mont-Saint-Anne is a World Cup, like any of the Canada Cup / national venues, Canmore, awesome venue, super hard. Hardwood is super hard in its own way,
Yep.
But it's hard to sort of equate that on a day. So I think Cycling Canada is looking at nationals as being less and less, specifically Olympic selection, definitely counts for World Championship selection. So it will have a big counter towards World Championship participation, but it won't necessarily select the Olympic team. But their big goal is that the Olympic riders are there, because they want the Olympic riders, they'll know that they're selected. So people, in a perfect world, people can come to the National Championships at Hardwood and watch the Olympic riders race. And they'll tell you, any of those riders will tell you, that wearing the Maple Leaf jersey for the next year is a big deal. So they're not going to be sandbagging at Nationals because they've made Olympics. They're going to be going for it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So. I watched more of the women's than the men's last year. And there was maybe five women that were cooking at the top. And you could see
that was
every ounce.
That was such an exciting race. Oh, absolutely. And the heat. It was so hot that day.
I could not believe it. As a spectator.
Cracking. Oh, yeah. They were cracking all over the place. And, and it was great because, to be a bit of a favorite, Emily is kind of a quote unquote local girl.
Sure.
And she wasn't having a great year, you know, yeah. up to her own expectation and other people's. And she came out at nationals and, you know, she didn't lead from the get go, but she just picked away, picked away, picked away, picked away. And she, you know, by lap three, she's in the lead all of a sudden. And it kind of was like, where'd she come from? Yeah. And she had like the most consistent lap times. And other people, you know, went out hard or cracked or whatever. So I look at that and go, wow, that was a textbook race and planned so well.
Yeah.
And what the other part of, you know, kudos to Emily that was impressive is that she stood around, I think it was 40 minutes after the race. She was still in her kit at the start line, signing autographs, talking to the fans.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't on the hottest day of the year. Like, it was unbelievably hot.
Yeah.
And she didn't, you know, go off to the tent to cool down or whatever. And that, you know, she knows that's going to hurt her recovery.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was really classy. I thought that was really, really classy. So.
But again, it shows, I think, like you're saying, that maple leaf means so much.
Oh, yeah, it does. Yeah, like,
yeah. That's,
yeah.
You know.
That was good. And it was great. The DeSera brothers, if, you know, I can't exclude the elite race.
Absolutely.
The DeSera brothers both won, you know, elite and U23.
Yes.
And in their home, quote unquote, again, home course, which was super cool to see. So, you know, it's neat. I love putting on the Canada Cup. It's a great event. National championships, to be able to run it, you know, here, and we have such a amazing talent in this area. Is really neat. And when we see people that can succeed, and we have in Canada Cups, like the Ontario riders, I don't think a home court advantage. I think they rise to the occasion because, you know, and they have a lot more pressure. They have all their family and friends around and people show up, and it's nice to be able to showcase that in our area. And I think that's part of what's, you know, led to the talent we have in this area. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And I know the DeSera boys, you said your daughter goes to Hardwood for, is that for
cross country
skiing? Okay. Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. for mountain biking, I know the DeSera boys have gone to do talks with the young racers and mm-hmm. whatnot. And very involved, I think.
Oh, yeah, they always, when they're around, they both will join a ride, like a pre-ride with the local development kids or whatever. They're very giving, all the riders. Man, my community is so awesome. Like, the riders are all down to earth and they all give back in their own way. Like, they're no prima donnas really. And it's great. It's great. Yeah.
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 So cross country skiing then, Glenn, I know you're a seasoned vet at, cross country skiing. Mike, are you in there as well?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. And I didn't know this, but I know it's a bit of a tangent, not cycling related necessarily, but, I learned that Hardwood has biathlon.
Just starting, yeah.
Do either of you guys do that?
No.
No.
No?
It's actually a super cool sport.
And it looks cool.
I think it's a great thing that they're going to add, that they're adding. It is a super cool sport. I think they're starting like more with the kids programs, the development programs.
Okay.
They did talk about adding some kind of masters learn to kind of thing, but there's no master biathlon races.
Okay. Like,
so events. There are biathlon for development kids.
Yeah.
There's a biathlon Ontario, but in masters, I haven't seen a masters biathlon race ever, really. Mm-hmm.
So not that we were looking for.
Not that we're looking for. No. Give old blind guys like a gun. No.
Yeah. Nothing like jacking your heart rate up to 170 and then hope you can lower it down to 70.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can shoot straight.
A couple seconds and then.
Well, biathlon is the most exciting race to watch at like the Olympics. Cause in cross country skiing, you know, the fastest guys, first people, whatever they go, they ski. But in biathlon, because if you miss a target, you either have to do a penalty lap or you get a time penalty, like a 15 second penalty for every target you miss. So the race is not decided until like the end, because they're all like, they do it time trial format. They're all so close together and, you know, guy can be ahead by 10 seconds. But if he misses one target, he's now down by five.
Right.
And it's super exciting. And they have a relay format where they have like four-person relay and stuff. And it's actually gets, biathlon is more popular in Europe and especially in the Eastern European countries and Russia than like Nordic skiing, classic Nordic skiing racing is, because it's something to watch. Like, as a fan, you're on the edge of your seat. Like,
they're winning, but he's got to shoot clean, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And the shooting range is right where all the fans are watching. Oh, yeah, it's so on a big screen. People are coming and going, watching the shooting. It's, yeah. There's a lot going on.
Oh, yeah, and it's on the screen, like the target's on the screen, and people are like, yeah, oh, when they miss, you know? It's this big groan from the crowd, right? So, yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah, yeah, that was neat.
Awesome. We have some cyclists who are looking to get into cross-country skiing, do you guys have a preference, classic, skate?
For me, it totally depends on the day.
Okay.
If you've got a background in hockey, I think you'll find skate skiing like fun. If there's good, like solid, well-groomed trails like they often have at Hardwood, it's faster. It's kind of got that sort of skate motion.
Yeah.
But if you've got some fresh snow or just sort of imperfect conditions, or if it's really cold, when it gets really cold, it's just so slow that skate skiing is not that fun.
Okay.
It's fun when it's fast, but it's not fun when it's slow. So classic skiing, like in a fresh dump of powder or something like that, classic skiing is awesome. So I go both ways.
No. Yeah, I think cyclists will find skate skiing, it's more leg muscle than classic, and it's an easier technique to become fairly proficient at, where classic skiing, to be able to ski fast and proficiently, it's tougher technique wise
and more finicky waxing.
But Mike's point is very true though. At cold temperatures, skate skiing is just painful, because it's like, I'm cold, like we're talking minus 20 and lower,
sure,
minus 15 and lower, because the ski doesn't glide and it's all about glide. So
or in like poor grooming, like if the snow's soft or if there's fresh snow, like there's just a lot of things that can make skate skiing not so fun.
Okay.
In the spring, when like they groom it and it freezes overnight, it's like skate skiing is so amazing. Yeah. And you wouldn't want a classic ski then.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, in the early season and when it's really cold and fresh snow, classic's so much better.
And I'd say for most cyclists, if they, you know, they're going to try and do one thing, skate skiing is the go-to.
Yeah.
And then maybe learn classic later. The one thing I always say with classic skiing, like diagonal stride classic skiing, you can walk, you can jog, and you can run, like if you compare it. But in skate skiing, you're running.
Yeah.
Or when you get good, you can turn it down to a jog.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you can't walk skate skiing.
Right.
So again, but that's why I say for cyclists, skate, or use fit, the word, because they're fit and they can handle that. They want that, like aerobic, higher intensity of a jog run versus a walk kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. This came up a couple episodes ago, and I didn't realize the depths to which some cyclists hang on to bikes. I learned Oren Bowser has every bike except a BMX bike that he had as a kid. How are you guys with your bike retention?
I have them all.
You have them all?
I have them all.
Really? Yeah.
And I'm the exact opposite. I get rid of my bike. Yeah, I turn over my bikes like crazy. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So how many bikes do you have, Glenn?
Roughly? Right now? Three.
Okay.
But four usually in the middle of the season, because I have to get my race bike. I get a bike provided to me for my race bike for mountain bike, so I have to give that back.
Absolutely.
But normally I would have four. But like, I turn over my bikes every couple of years. I love the new technology.
Yeah.
I love like this new bike for something else, and I love trying different things. Like, I've had a fat bike, I've had a plus bike that I don't have anymore.
Yep.
I love like the new suspension. I love trying like, you know, Damani versus an Amanda versus, so I love to do that. So I'm really bad. So I flip bikes very quickly, and I flip them for my wife as well. She's like, "What's the blue bike? Well, that's yours now. Well, we have my red bike. Like, oh, I got rid of that. I got you this blue bike because it's got like da 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 da."
I sold it to Mike.
Yeah, I sold it to somebody else, but I liked my red bike, you know.
That's
so
hilarious.
So yeah, I'm the exact opposite, because Mike likes
So you actually got... I was delighted, like when I got my first carbon fiber track out of Madone, and I had a Trek 5000 that Glenn said, "Oh, like you should sell that thing." And I'm like, "Oh, I don't know. I don't want to sell it. I'll keep it." I'm so glad I did, because I ride it in the rain, I ride it early season, if my Madone's in the shop, I've got another bike, and so I think I have nine bikes now. I mean, I have a few at the cottage.
Sure.
And a few here, like one that's permanently on the trainer, you know, that sort of mix up. But like a whole mix now of cross. I don't have any officially gravel bikes. They're cross bikes.
Yeah.
Mountain and road.
Yeah. Interesting.
Right back to the KHS, like no front suspension, hardtail mountain bike.
Yeah.
The Montana Pro, the first one.
Yeah.
So maybe a question of both of you. Do you, out of the bikes you've had, was there a favorite? Is there a standout you've had in your life and you're like, man, that one was really good?
Yeah, you know, I'll say I had a 1990, early 1990 Rocky Mountain Blizzard that had the old XT on it. Like this, when this is the first version of XT.
Okay.
And it was a, like a, it's fully rigid bike, no front suspension on it. Like this is before RockShox came out. But it was like the Rocky Mountain Blizzard was like, that was the Canadian made, like it was actually made in BC, Canadian made cool. Rocky Mountain Blizzard was like, that was like, I probably should have kept that bike.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so that was would be the one that I was like, eh, it'd be interesting. But you know, it was would be today, it would be so unrideable, like it would be totally unrideable.
Yeah,
like you'd be endoing on every hole.
Yes,
and the front end would lift on every climb.
Yeah,
like it would be horrible to ride by today's technology and the way bikes work. So you kind of look at that, and I'm not nostalgic, I guess. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah.
That's all right. And Mike, do you have a favorite out of the ones you
mine's got to be my Trek Madone.
Yeah.
6.9 SL. Glenn came over. Mm-hmm. We spent an evening over a couple of beers doing the full Project One buildup of that thing.
I think it's a rocket.
10 years ago now.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, that was my steed for 5 years of progressively getting better results at Centurion Collingwood 100. And yeah, there's some great memories on that bike.
Yeah.
At the time when I was fit, I could do some fun things on that.
And it's got to have north of 50,000 kilometers on it, right? Yeah, like amazing. Like
it's unreal.
It's amazing.
But even just the first time I rode it, like I think I actually picked it up and I was at Collingwood when I started right up Scenic Caves. And just the BB90 bottom bracket on that thing was so stiff compared to the bike I had been riding. Like it just felt like every pedal stroke was leaping me up the hill.
Yeah,
it's been great since. But I have to say this year, I haven't ridden it. It hasn't been on the road because I've been wandering. So shout out to John Barnes, a Kronos?
Yeah, his old Kronos cross bike. Yeah,
yeah, his old Kronos cross bike I bought off him 3 or 4 years ago when he went disc.
Okay.
It's a rim brake, but it has put basically pretty much, other than I've done a ton of mountain bike miles this year because I've needed to, like, cottage roads up from like Port Stanton, south side of the Severn, like you gotta be on a mountain bike for those things.
Yeah.
And all the trails by the Ed Center and stuff, but most of it's been on the Kronos.
Hmm. Have you ridden Swift Rapid Road?
On my motorcycle, yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Not on a bicycle.
Yeah. It's not recommended on a cross bike. It's got
no
a mountain bike.
Yeah,
for
it's
that
a mountain bike for that one. Yeah. It's a beautiful road.
Oh, yeah. I love that. Yeah, I was someone, I don't know who pointed that out to
you.
You
can take Adam's KOM on that one.
Yeah. I've actually posted a video of that on YouTube for my I had it just mounted a YouTube or a GoPro to my motorbike.
Nice. Oh, okay.
I went down and it was a good fun day.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not long, but
it's 15K and then back 15K.
An out and back for Wanderer.
That's an out and back for Wanderer. The other one is Black River Road. I don't know if you've ever ridden that one.
No.
It's off of Housie Rapid Road, Cooper Falls Road.
East of Washego.
Yeah, East Washego, off Cooper Falls Road. And it's a 15K. Now, you can drive to the end of it, same thing, but if you park at off of Cooper Falls Road at the bend, it's 15K, and you come to what's called Victoria Falls. It's in the Queen Charlotte wetlands.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's a gorgeous road, and that's actually fine on a gravel bike. It's really enjoyable on a gravel bike. Another nice road. It's an out and back, but it's well worth it, yeah.
And is there, maybe you found that this year, I don't know, but is there a wanderer road that you guys found this year and you're like, man, this one is the one, this is the best one I've been on for the year?
Oh, wow.
That's a lot of roads.
Oh, Jesus.
That's over 3,000.
4,500 K of road.
4,000 new kilometers for them to go through. Well, I'll give you mine. We went up through Owenda the other day and just heading south through some of the forest, I'll call them forest roads, whatever they call them. Man, that was just beautiful.
Yeah.
Just.
I was just going to say Awenda. Like that area, yeah, I haven't ridden. Yeah. And this time of year now with the tree, the leaves are off the trees. You can see all around the bay. It's yeah. gorgeous. Like Awenda for me was like a new find, basically. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah, I just mountain biked the Bluff Trail in Awenda like a week ago. And yeah, just gorgeous. I love that. That's probably been the best discovery is just the that whole peninsula.
Yeah.
Like all down the sort of western coast on Georgian Bay, like Allenwood Beach all the way up north of Wasaga.
Yeah.
It's absolutely gorgeous riding. Like there's the paved road, but then there's all these gravel and dirt roads that run parallel to it. And nice climbs coming like towards the center of the peninsula as you head over toward Midland Penetang. All the crossroads are just gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's some nice riding.
There was a couple I was talking like might even be if travel's not really a thing next year. That might be just a fun week holiday is just to get a campsite in Awenda and use it as your home base and just kind of
wander around.
Yeah, just wander around up in Awenda at that point.
Yeah.
Really beautiful roads up there.
Yeah. I got BT 700 on my bucket list
now. Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Have you talked to Adam Hill?
No.
It's on his.
Yeah. Well, didn't he try to do it in 2 or 3 days or whatever?
He did the GNR loop in one day.
The GNR. Oh, okay.
16, right. 15
See, I don't want to do that. I want to do it over 7 days or so. So, but actually, and to that point, that ridegravel.ca website.
Okay.
Anybody seen that? Like, there's more rides every week being posted to that. Because it's been a kind of an open source. And, like, there's a ton of rides in sort of the King Mount, Norland, whole area toward Haliburton, Corthus. Yeah. There's these gorgeous rides people are posting up to that. And that's, for me, I'm like, oh, I got to want to do this and I want to do that. And
Yeah.
Some of those. And the Durham Destroyers, the other one's got some the routes that are up for that as well. So
I've heard that's tough.
That's going to be, it's hilly. Yeah, it's hilly. But again, like really quiet, mostly gravel road. So, yeah.
Mike, have you, wanderer-wise, have you ticked all the boxes for yourself for this year? I mean, we're kind of coming to the end of the season.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll just keep riding until it's ski season, basically.
Yeah.
It's an addictive thing because it just keeps throwing more boxes up to you. You're always close to something new. I just looked today and I'm like probably a couple of rides away from hitting 0.5% of all the roads in Canada.
Really?
Like 0.5.
Yeah.
An hour from your door.
I'm like, oh, like I gotta hit that. But then as soon as you do that, then you're close to something else and there's always like a next goal that you can kind of, oh, if I just went and did a couple more rides in Kortha Lakes, I'd get, you know, that or this or whatever.
Now, didn't the guy who won Canada last month ride 3,000 kilometers?
I won Canada last month.
You won, okay. Somebody else something came up the other day that, it's already this month. Someone rode like it was something ridiculous. That was
And I don't know if they've maybe fixed it, but I think for a couple months, I think they had maybe a bit of an issue where people were new to Wander, and it would take their entire catalog. And I don't know if they were doing that on purpose.
Oh, right, and
they're backfilling it.
So right, was wrongly showing it all in a month.
Yeah, kind of.
I mean, I don't think it was affecting the challenge at the end, but in the interim, it might have been.
I think they maybe corrected that.
Okay.
And have you talked to Craig? Do you know what his end game is with this?
No, I don't. I've just gone back and forth when I was learning it and saying, I love your platform and just trying to figure out the issues of like, how do I do this? Or like, where'd that, when he makes a change, like where'd the download a map thing go?
Yeah.
Because it's shifted around a few times in the last 6 months or 7 months that I've been on it. So,
I may be ridiculously honest, but I went through Ant Mills Forest in a straight line. I just took when I got home, it showed me I'd done this whole loop in the one forest. So I sent him an email and I sent him a little screenshot and I said, look, I'm just turning myself in here.
Yeah.
I didn't do this. So, and he emailed me back just very polite and just, you know, yep, there's a bit of a glitch. I can see what happened with that. And so I'm assuming he dealt with it and I've never gone back to my map to see if it got corrected. But
he's been super responsive. Anytime I've sent him an email with just like a quick question or something like that, hear back from him, and like I'm always amazed how fast I hear back from him for a guy who's presumably getting emails from all kinds of guys
all over the world.
So great.
I
mean, who knows, maybe he'll sell it to Strava.
I mean, it seems like that would be a fit, but
if Strava's listening,
yeah,
it's a great thing.
Guys, let's wrap up on some Bell App questions if you guys are all right with that.
Okay. Sure.
Mike, we'll start with you and then Glenn. What's your 15-second power?
Not what it was 5 years ago.
Okay.
I still have no idea.
Yeah, that's good. I love that. What do you take in your coffee?
The general rule is just frequently.
Okay.
Black.
Glenn?
I'm black, a little bit of maple syrup still.
Nice. Yeah. Raisins and cookies?
You had me at cookies.
Okay.
No.
Pineapple and pizza?
You had me at pizza.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Love it. Yeah.
Fruit and beer?
Rattlers for sure in the summer.
Okay. Oh, yeah. And I've got Black Curtain, the rally beer that we're drinking here, by the way. It's an electrolyte beer. It's an electrolyte recovery beer.
With Black Currant.
And it has Black Currant in it.
Wow.
And it's awesome.
This is the best of both worlds.
It is. It's great.
What's your favorite band?
Oof.
This seems to be a stump.
He's not a music guy. Pink Floyd.
No, I'm not a music guy.
Pink Floyd for you?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. And maybe if you're not a music guy, this might fall on dead ears, but what was the first piece of music you bought?
Oh, that one I think I know. It's like whatever, Supertramp, Breakfast in America?
Oh, yeah.
On a record.
Nice.
Oh. Still have it.
Jeez, the first one I bought.
Even if you just, the first one that you remember. Even.
I'd either put Max Webster or Dire Straits.
Okay.
One of those two.
Do you remember which albums?
With Dire Straits? Well, Sultans of Swing. Whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
The first one.
On vinyl.
Yeah.
On vinyl. Yeah. Yeah. And Max Webster, I can't remember. Whatever.
That's
all
right.
I don't know. I think I was 15 and I went to a Max Webster concert and I was like, I got to get that out. You know,
That's awesome. All right, guys. Well, I really appreciate that. I loved our chat today. That was awesome. Mike, it's been an honor to meet you. Wonder King of Canada.
He's not wearing a crown, by the way.
No, just for Ontario. Just for Ontario.
Yeah, Canada, I got a lot of work to do, man.
Yeah. All right. Thanks guys. I really want to thank Mike Gordon and Glenn Mewissa for our chat. Great guys. If you follow Wanderer.Earth, you've come across Mike's name, and it was really cool to hear his sort of insight or his take on what his goals are with that. It's really quite interesting and incredible to imagine 4,500 new kilometers in 1 year. Glenn, thanks for sharing, obviously, your race background and what's happening with Hardwood and with Nationals for next year. It's super exciting, and I'm pretty pumped to get out there, hopefully, fingers crossed, and we can all be watching that soon. And I look forward to seeing those guys out at Hardwood with some skis on in the next little bit once the white season hits. Anyways, however you found us, folks, I'm grateful that you did. We're on the socials at All Wheels Pod. We are on Spotify, iTunes. If you got any suggestions or want to get in touch with us, we are allwheelsrolling@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks, folks.